So this is Doris Smith, and I'm talking with Chuck Grindstaff, President and CEO of Siemens PLM Software. How are you today, Chuck?
Good. Good afternoon. I'm doing great.
Happy August, right?
Well, it's a little warm here in Texas, but yeah, to you as well.
I know. I feel the burn here in Missouri. So, hey, I thought on this podcast, I'd like to kick it off talking about maybe somewhat a new term for others in the industry. You might be very familiar with it. But I've been seeing this new acronym pop up, actually two, SDI and SDPD, referring to systems-driven, I guess, innovation or product development. Mm-hmm. Can you share with folks, you know, I don't know if it's a strategy, a process, or a methodology, sure. But what really is SDI and SDPD?
Yeah, you know, from the terms are not necessarily completely interchangeable, but certainly very closely related. The idea, Dora, is that we really look at a product as the system of systems that make it up and into which it's going to operate. And so to the greatest degree possible, we want to be able to not only define the traditional connections between all of the components in a product, but also the functional characteristics and safety characteristics and sustainability characteristics of that product in a way that allows us to close the loop with the requirements that we might perceive as important for the product. So in this way, what we can do is really decompose complexity into modules that take responsibility and subsystems that take responsibility of a product down to the various elements, and then really allocate that function to mechanical systems or control systems or interaction between the controls and the mechanical systems into something that really works as a whole. Now, you know, in many ways, that's what engineers on complex products do every day. So it's giving an acronym to a process that, you know, an aircraft engineer, an automotive engineer, a machine designer, or even, you know, somebody working on, you know, wearable technology, footwear or, you know, watches that measure various biometric characteristics. Anybody that's working on things that are more than really just a simple mechanical system. You know, example of what I mean by simple is the chair you're sitting on probably doesn't have a lot of electronics or any electronics in it. But there's not many examples beyond that these days where products are successful in the market if they aren't a convergence of disciplines. They aren't providing new integrated value by putting things together in unique ways. And in order to deal with that, we have to be able to look at the entire system, the entire product as a whole, and not only that, see how it fits into its ultimate operating ecosystem.
So is it different from, or maybe the next evolution of what we maybe refer to as systems engineering in the past, or, you know, one of the other things I'm thinking of, and maybe this is more on the design innovation side, but we used to have kind of that what-if alternative, you know, for automotive vehicle evaluation. Is it along the same lines of those concepts?
Well, systems engineering is a part of this whole process. I mean, typically what people have thought of as systems engineering is a upfront process of allocating various characteristics down to subsystems is still a part of it. But what's more important these days is that we really look at the evolution much more continuous, much more iterative, and able to adapt to the requirements that can change throughout the process, continuous validation as more and more refinement and more fidelity is entered into the models. So what I guess the separate discipline of systems engineering is really just a subset. And you mentioned the sort of parametric assembly concept that we call this what-if alternative value engineering thing, called it WAVE way back when. We were really, in that generation of technology, focused principally on sort of geometric associativity, getting the variation of the models to coincide with the nominal characteristics in such a way that you could build products, build them with a set of mechanical constraints and rules, and then propagate change from a high level through a structure. So that's related, but it's really only a piece of the puzzle. As I said, these days it's really what we would call closed-loop performance engineering all through that process. So we want to look at the control systems and look at how they respond and look at how they may impact the overall system performance and tie that behavior of the integrated system to the requirements and to the testing and to the validation. So, you know, those earlier generations are pieces of the puzzle, but they're not really the full scope and nature of what we mean by systems-driven innovation or systems-driven product development. We use both terms.
Okay. Now, I wonder how this relates to, you know, an industry analyst recently had a blog post, I think it was Chad Jackson, about, you know, the engineering V maybe being outdated or somewhat failing us, and you just touched on the need for things to be more iterative and ongoing. Is that engineering V changing? Is this systems-driven product development going to be a framework for kind of updating or replacing that?
Well, you know, the V model is familiar to a lot of people, and I think most everybody knows that whenever you have a graphical model like that, it's going to have some limitations. I didn't read Chad's paper. I guess I should, but my guess is that he might be worried about reuse. Reuse is not an explicit element within the V model. It's very important. He might be worried about continuous validation, which we tend to represent as little closed loops going up and down the V. If you see the graphical elements that we use, where we show the target setting, the modeling at various levels of abstraction, and then the analysis and rolling those down the V. So, you know, the V model is a little bit rigid in the sense that it kind of implies this notion of a, you know, you dump requirements on the top and you get out product at the bottom and you get to this, you know, ever decreasing degree of complexity. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, all of us think of that as just the backbone of the strategy, and we don't, I guess I wouldn't say it's failing us, but I would say that it's missing some key elements like continuous validation throughout the process, like adapting to requirements, like reuse. And I'll go read his paper and see if he's come up with something else in there, but those would be the things I would guess he's referring to.
Okay. So does this all tie into, you know, a lot of the other buzz terms floating around right now, the Internet of Things and big data and even Industry 4.0? Does SDI tie into that, provide a better strategy for as we move forward and taking into the complexity of those concepts?
Yeah, it does. Or when I talked about being able to understand how a product in its operational phase is interacting with the environment, that's really a kind of a connection to this, what a lot of people call the Internet of Things. The idea is that, you know, obviously, products when they're operating have not just a single or set of functions, but also have intelligence built into them that they can both sense and transmit information about their state of condition, and that information can be used not only by adjacent devices or peer devices, but also can be used kind of at a supervisory level by communicating upwards to systems that are looking over a large collection of objects. And, well, you know, we see this being fundamentally important. I mean, there's lots of great examples of how this concept of more intelligence in the devices can add value. My favorite these days, because it ties right into what we're doing with Industry 4.0, is the cars that you see that are starting to drive autonomously. You know, obviously the major car companies are adding more and more what I would call really safety elements, like automatic braking and collision avoidance and things like that. But they're also toying with, you know, not just toying with, but linking together adaptive cruise control with the ability to actually steer the car in many cases for a short period of time. And then you take the Google example, and you know what they've done is really gone straight after a fully autonomous driving vehicle. Now, what's cool about that is it sets up, as I said, a good metaphor for what we're doing in Industry 4.0. With an autonomous driving vehicle, you have the rules of the road, you have the overall view of maps and the topology of the roadway, you have all the sensors and mechanisms to respond to signals on that sensor array. So this is, you know, finding adjacent vehicles, looking for obstacles, dealing with, you know, sort of the unexpected things on the road and also the expected. And integrating all that knowledge together is really getting to the point where it can function. It can function very effectively, and you see these cars riding around. I think they even have a provision for licensing them in a few states. Like I know California does that, and I think a few others. Well, what if you take that behavior, that innovation, and say, well, what about the factory? We've got lots of relatively sophisticated devices in the factory. Some of them are very explicitly controlled right now, or even controlled by operators. Some of them have a lot of intelligence. They certainly have sensors. They certainly have the ability to respond and communicate their state and respond to stimuli from the outside. And that's going to increase, and it's going to increase very dramatically as, you know, we at Siemens take our controls and our motion control products, our other products, and put them together into advanced machines. And, you know, with that intelligence improvement and with the ability to respond to signal streams, obviously one important signal stream is the things that the devices communicate over the internet and or intranet. And our idea is that the increasing sophistication of those devices in the factory, kind of like this autonomous driving vehicle, can operate less at the very explicit instruction level, like go here and go there, or bend this joint on this robot to this angle, but very much more on an objective basis, try to accomplish this job, and here's the set of constraints and rules and safety issues that you need to consider. Like that car, you don't tell it precisely to roll down the street for 500 yards and then turn left. You say turn left at the next intersection, and it has enough intelligence to sense where that intersection is and deal with any of the variations and calibrate on the fly and deal with a roadblock or an obstacle. And we see the same sort of thing happening in the factory. We're helping to fuel that with our intelligent controls and control systems. And then on the PLM side, what our idea is to help to program the rules of the road in the factory, if you will, to simulate the behavior of those devices in their function, and then to also be able to control and command at the sort of meta level as we're trying to get product through the factory to optimize the flow of material, to give advice and direction to, you know, the overall set of devices. And so this is a great time. We're adding this intelligence. Compute power is where it needs to be. The logic and the sensor systems are available, and we're doing our best to put it all together into this ever-increasingly intelligent set of devices operating in the factory.
So when you talk about the factories and even the example of the autonomous vehicle, that definitely helps it hit home. I guess I'm curious, is this something that really, you know, systems-driven innovation apply only to a large manufacturer, or do you see a fit for small to medium-sized companies as well?
The concepts apply really to any level of product complexity, but I would say that the more the product is interacting with other systems, the more the connections are between either subsystems within it or it with a broader environment, the more the need for a view of that entire environment and entire set of interactions. And so the answer is it's applicable across the board. You know, I mentioned wearable technology. You know, certainly would want to make sure that not only the software systems, but the devices, the analytics around those devices and the sensor data streams that are coming out are all fully connected, working well, giving the right kind of feedback. But, you know, you're going to see the big complex product companies really pushing hardest on here because in this area of systems-driven development, because it allows them to really slice and dice the complexity into manageable pieces that the engineering team can really optimize around. So, you know, that's the automotive transportation, aerospace, complex machinery, industrial machinery. These kinds of products are the really bread and butter of the system driven approach. And so, you know, it's going to, you know, as the completeness and ease of use of the systems improves over time. I see it really reaching down and touching pretty much every product.
And so, you know, since you mentioned all those industries, it reminded me of the catalysts that we started announcing maybe a little less than a year ago. So what's the connection there to systems-driven innovation? Is the catalyst kind of that industry industry view of that system, or how would you explain that?
Well, we talked about catalysts, I think, in one of the previous things. But, you know, what catalysts are is a way to embed the knowledge of an industry or knowledge of a domain into our systems to really give a quick start to somebody who's trying to adopt a particular new innovative process or set of processes. So we've already released our electronics and semiconductor catalyst. This helps companies that are in that space to get going with Team Center and with the design systems interconnect for their engineering teams around those processes that they are used to. We have marine catalysts. If you're building ships, the way in which you put together all the subsystems of a ship, the HVAC, the electronics, the drivetrain, the various cabin interactions and layouts, and really all those major across the vessel systems, managing those is done with this catalyst. And then, you know, obviously, new processes like functional safety, ISO 26262. We have a functional safety catalyst already in the market, and that lets people who are trying to adapt to that functional safety or requirements accountability to really get up and going quickly. And, you know, we're about to roll out several other catalysts. You know, we have really by the end of the year, we have a catalyst for energy. We have catalysts for footwear, for machinery, for aerospace, for the important process of verification and validation within aerospace. So these catalysts are getting a lot of traction. Our team in the field is using them as really a foundation or a base to get customers up that much more quickly and lower the cost of ownership and get people into production even faster than they could do in the past. So, yeah, we're getting a lot of traction with this.
Okay. So thinking about industry applications and this broader concept of systems-driven product development, you know, I know it's about trying to take a lot of complexity and make it more simple and hopefully turn it into a competitive advantage for companies. But it also makes me wonder about what the worker of the future looks like. You know, I mean, I know you studied computer science. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see, I was recently at the PACE Annual Forum, and you had these university teams or teams of multiple universities designing personal assistive mobility devices. And they had to innovate and collaborate through the year and then actually build a product and deliver and test it. Yep. The University of Michigan recently won the American Solar Challenge, and there they have systems, you know, that they're trying to talk to one another so they know, you know, how strong their batteries are at any part of the race. So yep. I'm wondering, are these students set up to be ready to really work in this more systems-driven product development, or do you think there's more that needs to be done there to kind of combine maybe engineering and some of what, you know, you were familiar with in your education?
Well, the students are, in fact, doing exactly what systems-driven innovation is all about. They are connecting complex subsystems together into a working, complete system and then interacting with that when it's in its operational phase. So that's exactly what we're focused on. There, you know, obviously the place where we can help the most to help further that progress is make sure that the students have the right tools. As you know, Dora, we've been around the world with hotspots. Hotspots campaign is focused on not only universities, engineering schools, but very importantly, community colleges, high schools, to expose and enable those students with the latest state-of-the-art tools for them to apply the concepts that they're learning in their coursework in a practical way on projects like you just described. So, you know, boy, we've been all over the place, Cincinnati, Mott Community College, up in Massachusetts, a whole consortium, I think 12 schools up there. We obviously Virginia, Pennsylvania, really, I think in total, but I don't even have the final count here, but it's must be upwards of 35 schools that we've enabled in really just the past few months.
And so do you see that too? I mean, we've been talking about maybe engineering and computer science, but this need for, are you hearing that from our customers as well, this need for skilled technicians that have more software experience?
Oh, you bet. I mean, just go back to what I was saying about Industry 4.0 and the more intelligent devices. You know, obviously the manufacturing worker of the future needs to be very comfortable around the kinds of devices I described. They need to be able to understand how they work, what kind of things need to happen in order to keep them working. Need to have good computer skills, need to have good basic math skills in order to be able to deal with the sophistication of the information flow and the devices that are operating on the factory. It's, you know, a good manufacturing worker of the future is not somebody with a hammer and a really strong arm. It's somebody who, this worker of the future's hammer is understanding of math and science, computer science in particular, how computers work, and what to do and how to nurture and feed them over time.
So I know you've been at a lot of different user groups around the world over the last few months. I think we have an analyst event coming up next month. Any yeah. other hot topics that you want to talk about today, or are on the on folks' minds, either customers or industry analysts?
Well, I think we do have the analyst event coming up, so I'll save a bit of the surprise for them there. But I would say that this systems-driven innovation is a very important area for us. Industry 4.0 and how it fits into the design process, the manufacturing planning, and manufacturing execution. One thing maybe would be of interest to those that are listening is we're expanding the software portfolio here at Siemens PLM. We're bringing together the software assets that used to be in our AS, our Automation Systems business unit, together with Siemens PLM software. So that's our MES, our manufacturing execution systems, quality systems. So really sets us up to be able to not only handle the design and product manufacturing planning issues around PLM, but also reach into the factory and really tie together even more deeply than we have already the automation planning, automation control and oversight, and the manufacturing control and oversight. So we're real excited about that. It brings those colleagues just ever so much closer to us. We've been working really well with them across the business unit boundaries and expect to be able to do that even better in the future.
Okay. Sounds like more systems being integrated for system.
Yeah. And also the scope and boundaries of what we can pull together is, and that's changing over time. I mean, in the past, a lot of the kinds of things that I talked about were very distinct, separate systems. And we really think that knowledge and interaction between them can add a lot of value, save a lot of time, make things go faster. And so we're putting a lot of energy into that.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat, Chuck.
Pleasure, Dora.